This is like the what is the total number of 7-year-olds that it would take to take you down? Because it's there is a number.
What kind of question is that? Like,
if you want a chinchilla, I'll get you a chinchilla.
If I want an American flag made out of the hide or the fur of something, I want it made out of an American animal. Now I'm like, what in the world was I ever afraid of? I'm gonna football punt this thing. Like, I'm here for you. Like, thunk. See you later.
Would you rather fight a horse-sized duck or 100 duck-sized horses?
Are you bringing back frosted tips? Scott, is your hair lightening?
Yeah, that's actually what happens naturally with age.
Two guys telling stories and talking shop when it comes to life, work, marriage, fatherhood, and anything else that comes to mind.
This is At the Breach. I'm a natural at this, Michael.
This is At the Breach.
This, you sent out like the family like Christmas card.
Yes, the announcement,
right?
The precursor to Instagram.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lauren and I have never done that, and maybe it's just because it's just the three of us, and it's always been a small family or something.
You haven't? I swear, I thought we used to be like, well, we got the Fraser card. Put it up.
It's like,
put it up on the entryway so we can look at all our cards.
Maybe like you send those out with the Venmo code on them now. Like, hey,
those are a money ask.
No. That's not.
So we're not just going to.
I mean, come on.
Everything.
Christmas cards are not a money ask. Graduation card is known to be a money ask.
Yeah, that's fine.
My compliments. You can't just Venmo. Smart play. Just acknowledge what it is.
Right.
Well done. And it got, you know. It got the intended response from old Uncle John. Now, I would run this by you and say, if we were to meet somewhere and you didn't preface, would Mason be able to say, oh, hey, there's John? No.
Yes, she would.
That's okay. What?
Yeah, she would.
Oh, okay.
John, you're famous.
I was going to say, John, no.
Try to tell me that your rising college freshman daughter has ever watched Shooting USA. I won't.
Well, no, I'm not going to lie to you on that. No.
Not by choice.
No.
But like the same reason that we watched Shooting USA when we were her age at, you know, 9 a.m. on a Saturday morning, the old man would come bounding up the stairs and kick open the door just to wake us up.
And then crank it.
And crank it so that I could hear my dad's voice in real life and in crystal clear 5.1, you know. Audio
comes full circle. I don't want to listen to you when I'm not listening to you.
That's what I don't want to listen to you when I'm not listening to you.
This goes way back now. I get it. All right, then. Oh, man. Good times. Great times.
Yeah, so Lauren put the QR code for Mason's Venmo on the grad announcement. That's a sustain. Okay.
Yeah, that was cool.
So people who may be listening that have friends that have children... Because the two people that I know that listen to these episodes have one has no children, and the other's child has already graduated high school or college. Yeah. I mean, so
it's 2025.
I would be interested to know, after it's all said and done, what the response ratio was. You know, what was the take off of Venmo versus what was the taking cash, and then the one or two checks you might have gotten. I'd like to just we don't have to be specific numbers, but was it like?
Venmo
was over here versus here. I mean, what are we doing?
There was a few people that did the Venmo. Lauren's father Venmo'd Mason. That was kind of a thing too, because he's a finance guy, but he's also like 60s in his 60s. So like the technology side of things is sometimes a little. He's like, well, people can steal your money out of Venmo. It's like. You know,
I mean, people will steal your money out of the mailbox.
I was going to say people can steal your cash out of the card too.
Right. Yeah. You know, but, and it's not that he's a, you know, curmudgeon or, you know, adverse to accepting new technology or anything like that. He's just not familiar with it. And, so that was the largest sum, that bolstered the amount of Venmo that went up.
Okay.
As far as the amount, I would say,
Maybe it's not even amounts. I would just say number of contributions.
Yeah, so participation.
Right.
Measure participation.
Right, so measured participation, more cards showed up with cash. So.
Yes!
Right. Than the, which was surprising to me, too. And then there was a, I think that we only received the one, I think it might have been only the one check, like the handwritten check. Maybe
go.
Two, you know, but
and he's on his way to the grocery store with that same checkbook this morning.
Yeah, yeah. Probably. Yeah. Yeah. He still goes to the bank, like, you know, and like,
you know, knows his tellers. They're not right. Like, oh, good to see you.
Yeah. So the one check, there might have been two. Yeah. And it's actually kind of wild. It's just never having experienced this before and not really knowing that that's what you're supposed to do. Is beg your family members for college money. It's kind of, you know, an interesting experience, I think. Because I thought you were just supposed to send the announcement and everything is cool.
Do you think that that sort of, the way you characterize it as begging for money.
Right.
Do you think that's something?
And it's not. Like we're,
do
you, know,
do
we're,
you think that's you bringing that to the table? Do you think that's you? Because you've never gone through this. You don't know. You're new to this. I mean, good Lord, aren't you the first in your family to go through this process?
Yeah. Well, yeah. So my nephews graduated college and so did my niece, and they're older than Mason, but my sisters didn't know how to do this process, or they didn't send announcements out or anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you think that you kind of bring that bias to the table?
Yeah, probably. I'm just like, oh, yeah. Well, you know, what are we doing? You know, it's
right. Like, oh, great. Another handout.
Right. Here we go. Deserve this. All we did was the thing. You know?
Great. Yeah. This is how it starts. Next thing you know, they're asking to co-sign on the car loan that they don't need.
Right. You know, it's like, you know, who's it, and that's the thing, right? It's like. We don't deserve this. Well, all we did was the most minimum thing, you know. But when in reality, it's a huge accomplishment for a child. Like it's their first major gate. It's their first major milestone.
Right, and it actually is a. And I don't like to. I'm not gonna gild the lily, and I'm not gonna trivialize it at the same point in time. Right. It still is something.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion. Or in anyone's opinion, I guess, for that matter, to like, hey, finish in high school. Now, we can have discussions about what does a high school, you know, diploma mean now versus what it meant in, you know, the 60s versus what it means, you know, I don't know. I'm not going to go down that road. But, I mean, it's still something. Hopefully you got a level of education. Not necessarily your ability to spin a, you know, a well-formulated argument about capitalism, but
right.
you're able to, you have a lot more soft skills, I would hope. That's what I would really hope, is like, hey, your ability to formulate your thoughts and your opinion and, you know, come up with an argument and then defend it with some sort of logic to... be able to socially interact with a diverse group of people to right. be able to recognize strengths, recognize your own weaknesses, and then hopefully work together as a team to collectively overcome those weaknesses and maximize the strengths that the group has. That's what I would look for. I would say that's still an accomplishment.
There's also, you know, we speak about the strength of the high school diploma now, right? Or like you mentioned that versus the 1960s. It's kind of neat that the school around here that she went to, you could get, if you like, it wasn't the business academy that they offered. It was a separate school that just offered like business classes. There's a lot of kids around here that will go into work, into the trades, and they... get like OSHA certifications. So like now they're already OSHA certified, you know, or OSHA qualified when they go into the trades, and that's, you know, maybe something that may or may not help them, you know, get a some sort of trade job, like a welding apprentice job, you know, at the zinc mine or you know, whatever is close by, you know, that kind of thing. Mace graduated with a Microsoft Office Associate Certificate. So, like, she's actually, you know, Windows certified, you know, at an associate level with PowerPoint, Excel, and Word, which, I mean, those are the only three applications out of that Microsoft Office suite that really are applicable in most office places anyway. So I think that's pretty cool. So yeah, like, I mean, theoretically, she could go get a local office job doing some sort of, you know, work. But hell, I think in the 60s, you could graduate high school and go get a job on Wall Street or something. Like,
it was, it was
different for sure. You know, you could do a lot more with a high school diploma in the 50s and 60s than you could as it developed into trying to get, you know, college education and stuff like that. So,
yeah, fair enough. Anyways, not to go down too far on this one, but cheers to Mason. Well done.
Yeah.
Well done to all the grads.
Right. All the class of 2025.
Yeah.
She, yeah, man. And then it's like Knoxville, middle of August. And I mean, she's only got 2 months at the house.
Oh, man. It's such a great time. I remember.
You barely remember.
I know. It's clouded. one through to far too many concussions and TBI, and then also what isn't rearranged and shooken up like a snow globe is, you know, further clouded by the very generous application of alcohol.
Well, congrats to you too, though, right? Accepted into grad school. The Foster Academy of Business at the University of Washington. It's top 10 program, my friend.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you. I was contemplating this the other day, or I was ruminating on it. It was a not easy task just to get in. And if that's an indication, if that's supposed to be the easy part, because I, you know, I posted, I was like, oh, you know, the easy part's done with. I got in. I was like, wait a minute.
That was a real pain in the ass.
Wait a minute. I'm in danger. Anyhow. No, yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much. I did. I got into that. I really, I kind of took a step out there and was like, I don't know. My undergrad GPA is a real, it's really indicative of what I was doing at that time and, you know, what were my priorities. So that was a big question mark, and I don't know, we're going to have to figure it out. I've been told that it is a, to balance family life, full-time work, and that program, can be challenging. Everybody keeps saying this, that are actually alumni.
Yeah. How many of them have balanced something as rigorous before?
I would say that, you know, during my in-person interview, the woman that I was speaking with, she was like, you know, I found out that I could operate on less than 7 hours of sleep. I was like, really?
First time.
That's funny. I haven't had 7 hours of sleep in, I cannot remember.
Right.
Yeah.
Pretty sure it was the 1900s.
Yeah. From, I'm all, yeah. Be gentle with me. I'm from the 1900s.
Right.
But yeah, so I'm pretty excited about that. I was actually, before we got on here, I was trying to figure out how to fill out my VR&E paperwork. Get that ready to send back in.
Is it I don't remember that being terribly challenging, but also believe that it's because my counselor was, it's really hit or miss with those guys.
And, right.
You know, he was, hey, fill this out. I was like, okay, well, you know, how do I answer question 1A or, you know, whatever? And so, yeah, just put something in there. You know, it's like, okay. You know, it's like, I mean, I appreciate the absence of gatekeeping, but like,
right. Right. You
know, I also don't want this thing to fall through in the end, you know?
Yeah. I think that's, I'm consumed. I use that quote again when I was talking with some people that I work with. I let slip that I have, you know, the military weaponized my anxiety against myself to ensure that I'm, you know, obsessive compulsive.
Yeah.
Not because they want me to be consumed with, you know, paralysis, perfection paralysis, but rather they want me to have attention to detail. And maybe they poured a little too much into that.
It's because everything you did, you know, quote unquote, everything you did, you know, was somebody's life was on the line.
Right.
You know, like no matter what you were doing.
Yeah.
You know, look at that toilet.
Yeah.
You know, if it's not clean enough, somebody's going to die. It's
like, I made a reference to military service and then brought it as into the corporate world.
I'm so proud of you, right?
Now. I know. And it's so bad. And the people that are listening are like, oh God, or the person that is listening. But I was writing a report that has to be submitted to like a state regulatory committee on behalf of a client. And I was like, hey, I'm going to need somebody else to review this report because I'm writing it. And they're like, what are you talking about? And I was like, well, I'm not going to see anything wrong that I put into the report, because otherwise, why would I put it into the report? Right. And I was like, you know, we used to inspect parachutes. And I was like, if I rigged up a buddy as a jump master, I can't inspect that guy because I wouldn't find the, you know, major deficiency if I rigged him up, because I assume that everything that I did was correct. So I need somebody to review this report before we send it out the jump door. You know, I was just like, and after I said it, I was like, man, what a dork. I wonder what people, what, like, ugh, God.
Meanwhile, the person that you're talking to is just like, oh, you're just casually going to mention you jump out of airplane.
The person that I was talking to was like, oh, you know, that's, I never thought about that. That's pretty good. We should do something like that.
That's pretty wild.
Yeah.
It's
very astute, Michael. I'm glad that we have you on the team.
Is that how that played out? that was the next step.
Yeah. Quite right. I'll see you at the club this afternoon.
Some man with a monocle and a waxed mustache.
Here's your key to the executive washroom.
Right.
Right.
I wonder if that's actually a written regulation. I don't think I've ever seen it in writing. I think it was just something we always did, and then we're told that's what you did, is you couldn't inspect
it. Made perfect sense to me.
I mean, it makes sense. It was,
but anyways,
one less leg trap I had to trace.
But yeah, weaponized anxiety and being the guy that constantly wants to name drop his military service in the civilian context is really... Well, even I am just like, man, I need to go take a time out.
My I've only mentioned it a couple of times when I felt like morale might have been low, because we support the VA on the contract that I'm on right now. It's doing a lot of good work. Like, I'm actually impressed by the things that we're doing and how they're going to modernize the VA and streamline the processes and, you know, kind of bring their IT stuff into the current world, to be honest with you. But it's because there's a picture that's part of like the onboarding thing of, you know, those like brown file boxes, you know, that you always see like somebody cleaning out their office, you know, when they get fired.
Oh, or right. Something like that. Yeah.
It's a room, and the building has been condemned because there's all these brown file boxes of upwards of, you know, hundreds of thousands of these boxes that are weighing, you know, tons of, you know, pounds just in paperweight.
Mm-hmm.
That is like, was the VA's filing system.
Ugh.
And yeah. And like, you had, it wasn't like, oh, you got to go to the A through F filing cabinet to find, you know, Frazier's file. It was, you've got to go to the A through F building you know, right. to go rummage through these things. And then it should be in quadrant 6B,
yeah,
you know, and all that stuff. So, so sometimes I'll be like, hey guys, you know, this type of stuff is really important to veterans. Like, this is actually helping us out. So, like, feel good about your work, you know. And sometimes it probably just kind of falls on, I would imagine most of the time it falls on deaf ears, but, you know, there's a couple of people who are like, hey, thanks for that. And then next slide, you know, what's yeah. going on.
So. Did, I heard a thing since you said next slide. I love this. Mm-hmm. This came up a lot in my military service. If you had someone that referred to a PowerPoint slide as a chart, it was a red flag or an indicator that they were certifiably insane. Have you come across this at all?
I've not heard that. What is this about?
I don't know. They just refer to PowerPoint slides as charts. Next chat.
Oh no, I've never heard that. I've always heard it next slide, or, you know, hey, did you get that deck done? You know.
Well, just be on the lookout, Bolo, for anybody referencing PowerPoint slides.
Now we're making
somebody drops a chart. Go ahead, advance to the next chat. Just be like, uh oh. We're dealing with somebody.
Speaking of work, the first layoff I've ever been through.
Oh, yeah.
I survived it. A lot of really talented folks didn't, for whatever reason. I don't necessarily know how I made it through. Now my duties include messing with PowerPoints and Excel documents, and I had managed to avoid that for the last year at my current job. And I was really excited because I didn't have to do anything in an Excel document or a PowerPoint slide.
Until now.
And now I'm like, maybe I could go back to cooking.
Well, I got to tell you, YouTube being the modern day digital library of Alexandria, it will tell you how to do whatever you want to do on Excel.
Really, like all the you've found videos for like formatting tabs and everything.
When I first started as an intern at McKinstry, obviously I have, you know, some level of experience with the office suite, just from being in the military. So I mean, but I'm not working the what's that? There's like an annual Excel competition. Where the, you know, it's like there's levels of this. There's like, you can get so good with Office Suite that you actually truly are, you know, probably should be compensated for your level of ability. But and then there's just like all the way down at the other end of the spectrum of like me being like proficient with Excel and other Office Suite products. And they're like, no, you're not. Like, stop it.
You can move from one cell to another.
Yeah, right. I can do a sum total and make sure that we're not over the gross weight allowed for this mission. Thank you very much.
As long as it's been formulated already. Yeah.
I can tell you generally what the difference between count and count A. I remember watching, like trying to figure it out while I was, you know, working on this stuff and just being like, oh, I better watch a quick video on how to make your Excel pivot tables better or use a better VLOOKUP function or whatever the case may be. And I know that is the highlight of just, dude, Mike's lost his soul and he is now an office, you know, office dork. But hey, man, you know, something to point out though is like, if I didn't know something and I'm this way now, I go and find out. Like, I'm gonna go fix it. I'm like, man, I don't know how to make this work, but I'm gonna go fix it. That's not always something that's baked in. Some people are just like, I don't know how to do it. Stop. So
I've experienced that. Not the full stop, but when it's like, man, what are we doing here? You know, this particular thing is busted. I'm going to fix it. Whereas, oh yeah, you know, I looked at that a couple of days ago and it was broken. I didn't know how to fix it. So I just moved on. It's like, no, man, why didn't you fix it? Like, why didn't you?
Right.
You know, the next guy coming through is going to need it, you know, or the next person filling in this slide or this, you know, filling in this chart is going to need it.
The the ability to identify problems is an E5 at best level of skill. If you are identifying a problem and offering solutions, good stuff. If you are implementing solutions because you found a problem and now you're removing it and you don't ever have to bring it up to anybody higher than your level, now you're really starting to cook. So it's out there. It's a real thing. I thought it was just only in the military, but no. I deal with that right on a regular basis.
My hat tip to my current, like the director of the program, or the project, it's a, so we had a sprint retrospective. So this is all, you know, IT development stuff, right? And in this IT retrospective, a lot of people, because I mean, we're still kind of dealing with the fallout of, you know, mass layoffs that directly affected our project, you know, less than 2 weeks ago. And, you know, during this retrospective, there's a lot of like, hey, there is no clear definition of what our jobs are now because they took two roles and combined them and, you know, everything else. And people are saying, oh, and compensation needs to be adjusted. And, you know, all this, you know, it's probably not a invalid point, but it's also, you know, these are Doge cuts because of money.
Right.
So, like, why don't we pump the brakes a little bit, guys? You know, like,
right.
You know, he speaks for himself, not for all of us.
I'm not with him.
But there's our director, she's a really, really great person to work for. She's just awesome. She's knows her shit, you know, knows everything that needs to happen and is really good about supporting things when she doesn't know. You know, it's like, well, hey, you know, what do we need to do here? You know, she's very solutions oriented. So it's like, hey, I'm hearing a lot of problems, not a lot of solutions, you know?
Right.
So it's, that's kind of like the gist. It's actually the culture of the project, which I think is, it's kind of a hard culture to develop of people actively seeking solutions versus just wanting to sit around and complain or point out something wrong and expect somebody else to fix it for them or something along those lines. It's a very, I guess to use the metaphor, you know, the E4, is the guy who's getting out, you know, after his first enlistment, E4, who just complains that the arms room's, you know, rusty weapons or something, you know, whatever the E4 would complain about, typically having to, you know, I don't know, mop out, you know, mop the motor pool or something, but which should be complained about if we're being honest.
Right.
But, you know, but doesn't offer a solution on how to, you know, prevent the motor pool from needing mopping. You know, that's not the kid that's getting promoted, right? Like, that's not the kid that you're trying to promote. It's that E5 that's like, hey, figured out that we can treat the motor pool with something and now it no longer needs mopping.
And yeah.
It's very
here's
poor.
We've got a problem here. Here's a potential solution. What do you think?
Yeah. This is a very poor example of what I'm trying to illustrate.
No, I got you. But the broader implications of that solution are then, you know, taken into hopefully higher and higher levels of understanding of context that maybe the original solution never took into consideration. You know, the reason why I wanted to chat today was just, you know, all kind of rolled up into a little bit of getting into the business school, life at work, and then, you know, to kind of, you know, does this come forward from the military or not? Today's episode, believe it or not, is revolving around or talking about imposter syndrome. Even though we've been talking about all sorts of other stuff this morning and not that, but you know, I've talked to some other guys that, you know, I still interact with, and most of the people that I interact with are veterans anyways. And they talk about it a little bit every now and again. They're just like, man, I feel like sooner or later, they're going to catch on that I'm a fraud and I'm going to get fired. And yet by every metric, everyone that I am friends with is doing well or is just, you know, performing well at their, you know, chosen sort of field of work after the military. And yet they all still kind of have this sort of latent kind of feeling about it. And I wanted to pick your brain and ask you, like, you know, hey, do you ever deal with that? Do you think that came from the military? You know, sort of that. And you mentioned a little bit about it when we were talking about Mason and talking about little Venmo QR codes. And you're like, oh, we haven't done anything. And I was like, oh, whoa, well, where did that statement come from? Whose voice is that? Because I would say, no, you have done something. She has done. And I know you're extremely proud. This is not a
100%. Yeah,
I know that. But we seem to have built in, I don't know, like governors that just automatically check us to the point where it's like, oh, yeah, hey, I got a promotion. Oh, man, it's only a matter of time. Eight up, move up. You know how it is. They're going to find out. And yet, could it possibly be? No, man, like they... Like you're a solutions guy. They're not promoting you because you know every answer, and you don't have to know every answer. But do we allow ourselves that space, that grace? What do you think?
So, yeah, and you know, I understand too the joke, you know, the tongue in cheek statement of, well, we don't deserve these things. All we did was graduate high school. When in fact, it's just a monumental occasion for, you know, it's the first time you know, maybe that or driving a car or something. I don't know. But, you know, now she's on her way out the door. It's a, where does the imposter syndrome come from post-service or even during service, really? Because at any given moment, I would make the joke that I wasn't hanging up any of my plaques or any of my like stuff in my office because I was going to be fired once they discovered how truly incompetent I was. You know, and thinking about this particular subject too, I was thinking, you know, is this something that already existed before we joined the Army? Like, was this one of those things that like isn't really a product of the Army, but was definitely exasperated by the Army? We use jumping out of an airplane as a pretty good example of a lot of things. I think that it's a pretty transferable conversation, right? So when you go to airborne school, you get your five jumps and then you get your novice wings, right? And yours looks just like everybody else. And there's nothing special about your wings other than the fact that they're yours. And maybe there's a degree at some point of, you know, being an airborne ranger or, you know, an Army Ranger or, you know, a Special Forces guy, like airborne school is a gateway to that thing. Like you had to be airborne qualified to do that thing in order just to have the swagger of being a paratrooper, you know, a Maroon Beret on a, you know, in the 82nd or in the 173rd or, you know, even what is it, 425 now up in Alaska, you know, there's always a little bit of swagger associated with those. Right. And like, and for all intents and purposes, like surviving five jumps and never jumping again, you know, there's a degree of accomplishment to that. But when you went back to work or when you got to the organization you were going to, you discovered that jump master was now the thing that you had to get done. Like in order to be a leader or in order to set the example for the folks, you know, behind you, in front of you, whatever the case is, or to show that you were proficient, you now had to go to jump master school. It's like, okay, but I'm still really high off of finishing. I'm a paratrooper. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, but just wait, you know, when you become an NCO and, or, you know, a leader and you get the appropriate amount of jumps, you're going to go to jump master school. And you're like, okay, cool guys. And then you go to jump master school. And then, you know, three times later you pass. And, cause it's jump master school is also like one of the only excusable schools that you could, that it's okay to like fail maybe. Right. Like,
right. Yeah.
And then as long as you go back and get it.
Yep.
So, okay, cool, man. You know, I'm a jump master. All right, man. Now you got to pull some duties, you know, like it's never good enough. Right. It's like now you got to get senior rated. you know, and now you're not a real jump master. You're a, you know, a Fort Benning jump master. You know, I went to the 82nd Airborne's jump master school, or, you know, whatever jump master school you went to, you know, whatever the case is, there's always something to be a little bit better, right? There's always a new carrot to chase. So at any given moment, you're being told that your accomplishments aren't good enough. You know, like, you just got to keep going.
There's a thing that permeated Ranger Regiment, and I know that it permeates other aspects of the military. It's not just a Ranger Regiment thing, but I encountered it all the time in Ranger Regiment. Like, the, you know, you're constantly being evaluated, and that was baked into the structure of regiment, in that you had to, if you wanted to move up to positions of authority, you had to go back to RASP 2. Like, I had to go back to and pass RASP 2 as an E7 trying to take a platoon. Mm-hmm. Or actually, I think I did it as an E6, but I was like, oh, earmarked for a platoon, you got to go back to RASP 2. And then I did it again when I was selected to become a first sergeant. I had to go back and do it again. And it was all sort of part of the, like, hey, you have to keep earning it here. Mm-hmm. You have to keep demonstrating that you deserve to be here. And it went hand in hand with the mentality of, like, hey, it's easy to pass RASP 1 or RIP, for those that are of that era. The hard part is actually staying in regiment or whatever unit. That was always the sort of motto. It's like, hey man, it's easy to pass this. And it was not easy to pass these, you know, these assessments and selections. RIP wasn't really an assessment and a selection. It was just a, you know, let's see what happens when we allow these people with some serious sadistic tendencies to be in charge of these people, and then whatever comes out the other end can come over to this organization. But yeah, so I wonder if that's it. So that mentality produced an organization that is hopefully ruthless with standards and operates at a very high level of proficiency. It demands of itself a high level of proficiency. And so to continue to create that environment in which you demand that level of proficiency, you have to create an environment in which, like, good job, that was yesterday. Oh yeah. Right. You way to go. You passed. Now you need to be a jump master. Like, okay, great. You made it the base, like the minimum. Thank you. Thank you for doing the minimum. I need you to do more. Right. You know, that produces an organization that is super high functioning. The flip side is, it baked into me, like, oh man, I managed to skate by this time, but it's only a matter of time until they find out that I'm a fraud. Right. I wonder if that's the cost of that level of proficiency, or baking that level of proficiency into an organization, that the cost of that is that there's going to be these outcomes or these anxieties in the members of the organization as they go forth.
I mean, yes, you know, or is it part of the personality or the ethos of the person that is attracted to these positions or these organizations? You know, like, kid shows up to basic training and he's got some inkling as to what he wants to do. You know, I wanted to be an airborne infantryman, or I joined with a Ranger contract. And, you know, maybe that kid was already an athlete. You know, that kid was already, you know, a pretty decent student. You know, that kid was, already attracted to, you know, seeing how high he can jump his bike off of the, you know, off of the curb or something, you know, or, you know, maybe that stuff that kids used to do. I don't know that boys are still kind of doing the, you know, running around the woods, you know, chasing salamanders or whatever, you know, like, you know, some Norman Rockwell, Huck Finn kind of stuff. But, you know, maybe it's that personality. Maybe it's already the kid that's chasing that the serotonin of you know, being a productive member of a team, and then and then maybe likes to, you know, see what it's like to be a little risky at times, you know, like jumping out of an airplane or something. Yeah. So is it the personality or is it something that already existed? I think that when we speak to the culture of the Army, it does. You have to, like, motivation, right? Like that's one of the buzzwords of the Army. Oh, you're just not motivated, you know? And if you, if a soldier drops out of a course voluntarily, it's not, they didn't drop out. It was a lack of motivation. It was a, you know, LOM, you know, it's like, so we blanket everything in motivation. It's like, oh, you just need to be motivated. You know, if you're motivated, you'd pass Pathfinder school, or if you were motivated, you'd deadlift 700 pounds. You know,
right.
If you were, you know, motivated, you'd kick that door clean off its hinges. You know, it's like, huh? Well, I don't want to not be motivated.
Right.
All the cool kids are motivated.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that motivation or using that term motivated, you know, it might be kind of a weird thing too, because it's really like, well, if you were motivated, you would just be a little bit better. It's like, well, I want to be better. I want to be better for myself. I want to be better for the guys and girls that are below me and that expect me to provide a level of leadership in which they deserve, you know, and I want to continue to be better. And we're only using schools as kind of like, you know, schools and assessments as the metric here, but it's not that, you know, there's, you know, it's not just a badge you got on your chest or whatever, or a ribbon or a tab or a skill identifier. It's a degree of like, well, I just need to be better, you know, because I need to be better. I need a good evaluation. I need to be better than the next guy, not to the point of being cutthroat or, you know, malicious or deviant, you know, against somebody, but I want to be a little bit faster than the next guy, but that's my own motivation. But it's also because there's some pressure to be better than the next guy, right?
Do you think that it's, you know, I made this a point a long time ago when we were talking about the mental health aspect of it, of valuing the stand versus the outcome. Do you think that it's a little bit of like we've fallen victim to not listening to that and applying it in this case to performance? Like you're valuing the outcome. The outcome, again, doesn't really matter. What matters is what really matters, or what should really matter, is your effort and the attempt, because that's the thing that you can truly control, right? So someone who has the heart to show up and give it a go and try, shouldn't that be what's valued? But instead we sort of look at, well, having the heart to try is the bare minimum. How did you do? Did you get your Pathfinder badge or no?
Cool.
And then, where's the balance between the valuing the stand and valuing the outcome? And do you think skewing too far to valuing the outcome leads to, you know, kind of, it's a pitfall to this sort of imposter syndrome of just like, oh man, because everybody's perfect until they fail.
Well,
newsflash, everybody fails.
Right.
So what do we do with that? So nobody's perfect.
Well,
so, you know,
when you went through Ranger school, did you, just want to go through the experience of, you know, sleep and sleep deprivation and starvation, or did you want to get a Ranger tab?
Well, I mean, I obviously wanted something,
right?
But I had to have, you know, I'll put it like this. I have encountered people, although it's not very often anymore, but you would encounter people. I mean, it's never anymore. I'm retired. I'm out. but there was, you would come across people that would never even go to the battalion wide PT tests, where if you passed it and you didn't have your tab, you were entered into a pool of people that could be selected to go to Ranger school. And it was mandatory. Like, everybody without a tab report to this. And then, like, all platoon sergeants report because you got to be graders. And everybody hated it. It was just like, grade these morons, you know. And you would have a line because it's regiment. So, like, everybody has to pass this gate. So, I mean, like, every single private who doesn't have their tab is lined up in the morning, and you're like sitting there, and there's all, you know, some platoon sergeants don't show up. So you have like extra long lines. You're just like, son of a, it's just not the way that you wanted to start your day, but it was the part of doing part of doing the work. But I remember running into kids that were just like, oh man, I'm just going to ride this out. I don't want to go to Ranger school. Well, that ain't the move. And they would still know, like, hey, you're going to get booted out of this organization. We're going to RFS you. It doesn't matter how good of a dude you are. We're going to get rid of you. You have to have a tab after, you know, however long. And if you don't, you're subject to release for standards. So there was that mentality. So you have to have like I wanted to go get my Ranger tab when I went to Ranger school, for example. But you had to have the courage to actually go and give it a go. I remember making jokes. We cracked jokes about this particular individual, and I'm not going to name his name, but he spent, I want to be as truthful and accurate. He spent more than a year in Ranger school. And I want to say it was like a healthy bit more than a year. But anyways, I remember I came to 2nd Battalion as a private, got deployed, did that deployment, came back from that deployment, did the majority of a training cycle, went to Ranger school, and this individual that was at Ranger school before I arrived at 2nd Battalion was in the squad that I was assigned to when I showed up. So I never met him. He was already gone when I got to Ranger Battalion. I met him for the first time in the chow hall line at Mountains Face, or in Mountains Face. I passed him, went on to Florida Phase, graduated, got my tab. He remained in Ranger school. I got back from Ranger school, went on a deployment, came back from that deployment, and he finally returned successful with his Ranger tab sometime in the training cycle after that second deployment. He had TDY. I want to say he got like over $1,000 of payback money from Ranger school, which is like, people are like, well, that's not, yeah, it's not. They give you like a dollar a day or something like that is like your permissive TDY amount for being in Ranger school. And we would bust that dude's chops. Like, God, he was the brunt of some jokes. But I'll say this, I don't know if I've ever met anybody who has as much grit as that dude. I mean, that dude lived in, he was in prison. He was basically in a really crappy prison for I don't know how long. And he made it through. And we kind of missed the, like, not only did he get his tab, but the value of the stand was really impressive. And maybe we missed that.
How was he when he came back from school? Was he?
Oh, like, God, it was awful.
I was about to say, you know, was it just like, if you don't have a tab, hit the slab? Like, was he just jacking kids up?
No, I mean, he wasn't like that. He was a generally a pretty good dude. But I mean, like, he was done. Like, that was it. It was pretty much like he got back. I think he went on one deployment and then he was like, all right, I'm out of the army. That was pretty much his military experience.
Wow.
Yeah. Savage.
Well, it's savage because, I mean, there's other groups of folks that are like, you know, what was the guy? Who's a Navy SEAL. He went from being like in the Navy or in the Army and then into the Navy. And then now he's an astronaut. Like there's that one guy who just,
oh,
like,
right. Yeah. You know,
I don't know.
He's a doctor name. Too.
Yeah. Right. He's a brain surgeon or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen his picture. It's like a motivational,
right.
Just your daily reminder that you suck. And this guy is way better than you.
Yeah. It's, so yeah, that guy definitely, you know, if it wasn't about the journey, then you would just take a flight everywhere you went, right? Like that's, it would just immediately get to the location. I think that, and this is something I always saw about, you know, oh, you went to Ranger school, you know, it's, I tell the moxie of the man because, you know, I know he's been to Ranger school. It's like,
well, the old handshake and then lean over.
Yeah, right.
To look at your shoulder, see if it's there or not.
I think I went first time go or, you know, or if he spent over a year TDY at Ranger school, you know, it's like
first time go.
Right. Nope. I remember vividly. To be fair, though, I mean, you had, you know, Christmas Exodus. So
I did. Thank God. Because I was like categorically by all medical metrics, I was dying right. And I needed a 2 week break. You know, so when we talk about it, when we focus so much on the outcome, we tend to fall victim to the evaluation of ourselves of like, oh, it's only a matter of time until you fail. That mentality is really easy to go down the slope of imposter syndrome.
Do you think that the imposter syndrome takes such a hardcore? Let's just go ahead and acknowledge that it exists, right? And
yeah.
It doesn't actually stem from like a low self-esteem. It's actually like high performance individuals and high achievers are like more likely to experience this. Like, oh man, I shouldn't be here. I better get good so that I belong here. And then you realize that as you're getting good, you're actually better, right? And then it's like, oh, well, now you're promoted, you know, or now you're, you know, in charge, or, oh, you survived the layoffs, or, you know, whatever.
Right. If that's there, it's an indication that you care.
Mm-hmm.
And then that caring manifests itself in ways that are generally good and desired traits in a insert, you know, whatever.
Team member, employee,
yeah, whatever. Team member, employee, leader.
Mm.
So would it be safe to say that, you know, a way to deal with imposter syndrome is like, hey, if the fact that it's there, if that motivates you to try, it's indicative of someone who is like that in and of itself should be the antidote for that anxiety of imposter syndrome.
I think empathy is always going to get you further than apathy, right? If you just care a little bit more, not only about your own performance or the product or whatever the case is, but about your team, like, and maybe that's the altruism of the veteran experience too, I think is a little different is, you can generally understand somebody more if they've played a team sport, right? You can generally understand that collective goodness of trying to get the entire team across the finish line, you know, or to the goal or whatever the case is. I think that if you just kind of care a little bit more about everything going on around you. And by everything, I don't mean like you deliberately spread yourself so thin that there's nothing left. You know, what I mean is like, you just kind of have to care about the end product, but understand that the journey to get there is really what's going to make it happen. Like,
right.
You know, if you're trying to earn a Ranger tab, you're going to go through, you know, the you know, Benning Mountains in Florida in order to get it, you know, and that's part of the journey. If you're trying to deliver a modernized software package, you're going to have to go through the iterative nature of the software development lifecycle to get to it as well. And that may be painful. It's like, shit, we thought we needed to do this here, but now we have to do that. And getting to the end state, you know, that I think it's, we do this to ourselves a lot. I think we do like a chicken and an egg scenario. You know, which came first? Was it the imposter syndrome or was it the performance, you know, desire, right. You know? Because I think just delivering, you know, it's like, all right, cool. Well, what's next? I mean, look at us. Like, but I was thinking about this yesterday. I was mowing the yard, you know, like shower meditations. But mowing the yard meditations are yeah. right there too. Is like, by and large, you're retiring from the Army, period. As say a sergeant first class is, that's probably a metric of success, right? That's probably an acceptable, respectable level of success, regardless of your job in the Army.
Sure.
As an infantry guy, I'd even still say that, you know, like I'd okay. say that if you retire a sergeant first class, you're probably okay. You know, like mm-hmm. you're an okay guy. Because some guys like 18 series guys, like SF guys, they retire as E7s all the time. Like that's not uncommon because the closer they get to eight, you know, that three up, three down scenario that we like to joke about.
Yeah.
You know, the end of the inning scenario is like the further they get away from actually doing their job, you know, so yeah. like team sergeant and then you hit sergeant major and it's like, you're kind of just out. There just isn't slots for you.
Yeah. There's just a tight pyramid at the top.
Right. So when you start looking at that, you know, that I would almost consider retiring as a sergeant major. That was very unappealing to me just because you're so far away from the gun at that point that it's like, say far away from the gun again, that's one of those things that I used to get out in front of the blast the other day at work too, by the way. and then was quoted later, by somebody who, you know, that probably had never heard the phrase before. I don't know. But anyway, you know, you're getting further and further away from the guys. You know, you're not necessarily doing the job that you initially really wanted to do and,
right.
you know, everything else. So retiring an E7 is okay. Like, you know, cool, man. Hat tip, you know. Retiring a first sergeant, I think, or a master sergeant, I think is pretty damn successful, especially if you had any type of turbulent past or any type of statistics against you. Mm-hmm. You know, I received a field grade Article 15 as a non-commissioned officer, like as a E5, and I still made, you know, I didn't get reduxed or anything like that, but I still, you know, survived and persevered. So when we start talking about like degrees of success affiliated with, you know, what's next kind of mentality, or the imposter syndrome of like, man, I don't belong here. I don't know. I think that the Army exasperated it, but I think that generally speaking, there is a type of person, and it's non-gender specific. It can be male or female, who just want to go out and be high performance people who are just kind of, I don't think it's genetic or maybe it is. I don't know. Somehow a desire to achieve is bred in certain people. And I think that those types of people then find themselves in a place where they're challenged to perform whatever they're doing pretty well. And then it gets to a point where, man, I want to be, you know, that guy, you know, I want to be, a famous chef. I want to be, you know, first sergeant scouting. I want to be, that's the guy whose career I'm trying to mimic. but you put that person on a pedestal, and it may not even be a specific person. It may be a series of qualifications. And then when you start getting those things, you've been trying to get them for so long that you don't even know that when you get to them, it's like, man, I busted my ass to get here. The journey got me to this destination. You're like, but I don't deserve this. It was too easy. It wasn't as hard as I thought it was going to be. And now I don't feel good enough. Like it's a strange phenomenon, because think about it. We retired first sergeants, respectable units. As an infantryman, I led every team as a non-commissioned officer in a combat scenario. That's kind of a feather in my cap, you know, and successfully, I would say, you know, that's something I can take with me, and nobody can ever take that away from me. I retire from the Army. I'm like, man, I need more. I'm going to go finish my undergrad because I'm not good enough without a bachelor's degree. Right. I'm doing just fine without a bachelor's degree, but I'm not good enough without that. I'm not good enough without going to Jump Master School. I'm not good enough to do this. Oh man, now I need a master's degree because somebody on the internet said I need a master's degree, or somehow or another, the people that I know who have master's degrees are phenomenal people. And it's not because they have master's degrees. It's just because they're good people. You know, they're naturally inclined to succeed.
That level of what we were kind of saying is the imposter syndrome is a symptom of you caring. Mm-hmm. And caring about your performance, about whatever, is one of the main ingredients that has led you to where you are and has oriented you on the path towards the goal of whatever it is that you are striving for at any given time. So the fact that you're concerned about your performance and are convinced that it's like, oh man, I'm going to get found out. But as long as that I'm going to get found out leads to, well, I better knuckle down and I better make sure that I'm doing the good work here. Because if I can just get better before I get found out, maybe just maybe I will, you know, not get found out, but actually deserve to be here. That sort of self-motivation, whether it's coming from fear or coming from that weaponized anxiety or coming from the end result of it is like, no, you care about your work and you're trying to get better. That's usually what comes from imposter syndrome, from my experience. Now, if your imposter syndrome cripples you and you can't move, then maybe that's a different conversation. But if your imposter syndrome is constantly nipping at your heels, so to speak, and you're working harder to get better, it's indicative of someone who cares. Someone who cares is someone that you want to have in positions of authority.
No, 100%.
And so to kind of put a little Neosporin on the emotional wound of imposter syndrome, it's like, hey man, that's good. I'm not saying it's good that you feel like garbage, but what I am saying is that it's good because it's indicative that you care. Now breathe and accept that you're doing well. Continue to work to get better. And then, you know, how does that sit?
You know, it's a pretty common scenario. It's something like 82% of people in the world feel like they've at least that they have been a fraud or have been fraudulent, innocently fraudulent, and don't deserve, like, you know, when I say innocently, you know, not deliberately, you know, Frank Abagnale committing fraud, but
right.
I don't belong here. Like, you know, I didn't lie on my resume and carry my own water, but like for some reason I don't feel I belong here. It's also common in people who are different. So in 1978, imposter syndrome was discovered, or, you know, whatever, you know, was listed as a real thing or started to be researched. And it was in high performance business women specifically. It's probably just because that was the demographic that was studied, but later went to find out that, you know, and also too, most of the guys in 78 in high performance business scenarios were probably just lying. No, absolutely. I belong here, you know, and just this false bravado, you know, because the '70s. So in addition to that, it's people who don't belong. So that high powered businesswoman in the '70s, well, who else doesn't belong in most scenarios? Like we sit here and we jab at ourselves for right. saying things like, "Oh, you know, inspecting a parachute requires." You know.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. All the other civilians are like, "This guy,
right? This douche.
Aren't you due at the VFW?"
Yeah, right. We get it, bro.
Yeah,
you know, 1% got it. Yeah. So it. Imposter syndrome, though not unique to the veteran community or the transition veteran community, I think is going to be a common theme throughout the veteran community. A friend of mine who I was a sommelier with, she was like, "Well, yeah, it's my imposter syndrome." And she just kind of like, "Oh, yeah, I'm doing it again." And then, you know, moves on, you know, because... again, she has a master's degree in education. She's an advanced sommelier. Like she's, you know, or a certified sommelier studying for advanced. Like she's running a dynamic, like one of the best wine programs as far as retail is concerned in the city. Like it's, you know, she's a high performance individual, but it's just like, oh yeah, I shouldn't be here. You know, I should be, you know, slinging, you know, hand pies, you know, off of a, you know, fried cart or something. You know, but
gently ushering people out of the Waffle House at 4:30 in the morning.
Right.
So that's where I should be.
It's, so it's kind of an interesting thing to think that it's as common as 82% of people. Albert Einstein, Ernest Hemingway, some of the like more brilliant people in their own respects, have never felt like they were, you know, deservant of any of the recognition.
Yeah. What's that, that thing that I was saying, like the darkest trick that our mind plays upon us is making us feel like we're alone.
Yeah. Right.
When it's like, no, man, everybody's going through this. If 82% of the general polled population, and I would say probably more because people lie on polls, are feeling like at some point in time they're a fraud. It's a human condition. But I would say that the very nature of feeling like you're a fraud means that you care and you're trying. And that's the thing that matters the most. Like if you're the guy who's just like, well, not, you know who doesn't have imposter syndrome? The guy who's like, not my job. Don't care.
Right.
So there it is.
Yeah. That's a good one. I think that's important for folks to really wrap their heads around. It's like even with Mason graduating, like, oh man, Scott, you must, you know, congratulations to you. I didn't do it. You know, Mason carried all of her own water. And when right. I was, and when she wasn't, I'm sure Lauren was doing it. You know, I wasn't here.
Wow.
You know,
congratulations, that's not true. Is yeah. due when you as a parent have taken an active role in creating a home and a quality of life that allows right. your teenager to reach that milestone. So accept that. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I will try.
Nice.
Well done.
There you man. Go.
Well done.
Yeah. I got
some notes. Let's run through those right quick. Scott's daughter has graduated, and their announcement format
leading us to a battle. Scott's begging for money again. Here we go.
I know, no.
Rattle in a cup.
Value of a high school diploma. Mike is starting on his MBA journey. Does the military overvalue perfection, and how this leads to imposter syndrome? Who has it? And what good can come from it?
Yeah. I would be remiss not to mention that Lauren is also starting her MBA program in August. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's okay. Lauren and I are starting at the same time, and yet Lauren will achieve hers well before I will.
I think her program is just shorter though, right?
No, I think that Lauren's just smarter.
She's pretty, I mean, look where she landed, you know what I mean?
Yeah, fair enough.
Pretty smart move.
Mike's starting his MBA, and so is Scott's wife. Who will finish first?
Tune in next time.
So I was going to say, I know where the smart money is.
Okay.
How long is your program?
2 years.
Yeah, hers is only 16 months. So,
you go.
So, got it. Accelerated, though. She's going to be drinking from a fire hose.
Brutal.
Somehow we can handicap that. Let me get that on DraftKings. We'll figure it out. All right, man.